were put to us throughout this period, which is that we're no longer interested in your plans. What we want to know is, do you have the will to implement your plans? Do you have the political backing and consensus to show concrete milestones? And tell us what milestones must we look at or look for as a demonstration of your intent to actually implement the plans that you actually have. Now, those same factors apply to the ratings agencies as well. 10 days ago, Moody's was in South Africa and they met a wide range of stakeholders. They actually seem to be having a second round of telephonic or video interactions with a number of people. And next week, DG and I will be meeting these ratings agencies again in Washington to continue our discussions as well, in order to persuade them that in our environment, which would include the political environment, we still have sufficient going for us as an economy and as a country for them to believe that we have both the ability and the willingness to pay our debt on one hand, but also the determination to work with all sectors of society, labor and business included, in order to create the right environment and impetus for in our growth as well. So if you look at the other elements of the mandate of the Treasury, which includes, as I said, promoting fiscal policy in the right way in the context of an overall coordination of its macroeconomic policy, ensuring stability and soundness of the financial system, coordinating governmental, financial, and fiscal relations, which in South Africa is also a critical matter, which I'm not sure how much the committee looks at, because more than 50% of the nationally collected revenue is actually goes to subnational spheres in our kind of environment, i.e. provinces and municipalities. The budget preparation process you're familiar with, and enforce transparency and effective management in respect of revenue and expenditure, assets and liabilities, public entities, and constitutional institutions. Now, in this context, particularly in relation to public entities, that we must start raising some alarm bells for this committee to start looking into more seriously as well. In other words, at some stage, Chair, we would say to you, undertake an overview or review of the financial situation of state-owned entities. Have a look at how well they are being managed from a financial point of view, and whether their general management and procurement practices are in line with the kind of prudence that we want at this particular time in our economic environment. And whether these precepts are in fact being implemented at the day-to-day level. And then the Treasury had a great interest in this, Chairperson, because the various guarantees that we offer, which total 475 billion rands, are in fact a contingent liability against the balance sheet of the state. If any one of them fails through, meet any of their requirements, government has to find that money. So if you take SAA as an example, it's 14.4 billion rands as a guarantee, much of which they've used. And if there's any problem in paying back money that they might have borrowed in the commercial world, then the state must find money to pay for that. Eskom has a guarantee of about 350 billion rands, of which it is about 200 billion rands. And the same applies in that kind of context as well. So financial management of these institutions is of great interest, I would submit, to your committee in the overall economic context. Because stability in that kind of environment is absolutely crucial to the overall financial and economic health of our country and of the interests of all South Africans. The second or the third slide, well, that's the one before that, I think. Yeah, this covers our interest in ensuring that the economy grows faster, that we have a transformed and inclusive economy that is less dependent on debt finance consumption. And the inclusive part of that sentence, if it is a sentence, is the crucial one that we fail in South Africa. There are too many people that are marginalized, and again, what macroeconomic policy can contribute to that is something that we need to continue to explore, but clearly the rest of government and parliament in its own right needs to come to the party as well. Work or jobs is obviously a crucial area as well, and you can see that even at a global level, the question of jobs stroke work is a serious challenge. And as technology advances, the situation gets worse as we go on. Poverty and inequality are our own challenges, but they're challenges globally as well. And the divide in South Africa between the ultra-rich and the poor, and those who have accounts in Panama or anywhere else in the world, and the masses in South Africa, is one that is growing. So we do have a super elite coming from all sectors of society that have both the means and capability and the advice to use these various tax havens to evade tax and to engage in money laundering and other schemes which are to the detriment of the economy as a whole. So I think, committee, you would have an interest in those areas as well. The next slide, 5, just sets out some of the instruments that the Treasury has at its disposal. I'm not going to go through all of those, but we are available to discuss those with you. Slide 6 looks at the legislative matters that come before the committee, and I know the Chair is very concerned about the long list that we have on slide 6, slide 7, and slide 8. All of which we are all familiar with, and we've undertaken just for the information of the committee members that we will meet with the chair and with of the committee to plan how we manage all of these in the time available this year, given the local government elections that might be taking place and interruptions that might cause to Parliament's program. Slide 9 outlines the three outcome areas that National Treasury contributes to. I want to conclude on the note and then hand over to the Director General Chairperson to take you through the rest of the presentation. On the note that the Treasury is, and the other institutions within what is normally called the finance family, is a crucial institution of the state. It has a vital role to play in order to ensure and assure both South Africans and the world that the finances of our country are in good hands and that there is a constantly a rational, balanced, and pragmatic approach to the kind of tasks that we face. We're all familiar with the fact that at various stages there might be and have been attempts to interfere in this work or to limit the scope of what the Treasury is able to do. And I think it's important that Parliament becomes aware of some of these phenomena, if you want to call them that. But I want to assure you that the Director General and his staff are absolutely committed to ensuring that they do what is best for the country and that at all times they serve the national interest. And not in sexual interest as far as their work is concerned. So on that basis, let me ask if you with your permission for the Director General to address you.
Comrades, I think it's fine. Given the Ministry is saying that we take the DG and then we'll deal. Oh, welcome to Charles here, the Chair of the Ethiopian Committee. Ms. Dumasani and Ashona, yeah? So can we take the issues together?
So shall we hand over to the DG? Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. This can be a very long presentation, which I hope, really hope, I can go through it fairly fast, because it summarizes in a way two documents, our strategic plan, and then focuses on the performance, in more importantly, year one. But before I do that, because our parliamentary liaison officer has hinted to me that you had an overview of the strat plan. I think the part of the strat plan, which the minister has covered reasonably well, anyway, that is not going to be in the presentation, it would be the part where we deal with just the situational analysis. But the minister has covered something, which is about the economic environment in which we operate in. You will see when you look at this that there's a lot of emphasis on, for instance, resolving the energy constraint, because by our estimates, if we were to just track that with the measures that are already underway, the renewables, accelerating the construction of Medupi and Lusile, and of course other initiatives, some of them announced in summer in the budget, then that would afford us an opportunity to add anything between 0.8 and say 1 percentage point of our growth, which begins to change the picture in a material way. But in that context, this threat plan and one preceding it emphasize the need to ensure fiscal sustainability on the back of a period of slowing growth, slowing revenues, an attempt by government, or efforts by government to support the economy using fiscal over a period of time, which saw us accumulating a significant proportion of debt. The issue of fiscal sustainability has become very important, become paramount. Hence, the budget that the minister unveiled in February talks in very pointed terms about fiscal consolidation, over which period we anticipate that we will bring down the deficits to around 2.4% on a consolidated basis, and we are looking at the primary balance turning positive in the financial year that has started, marginally so, but becoming decidedly positive, reaching 1.2% by 2018-19, which then begins to paint the picture of a debt trajectory that shows that our government is indeed taking charge of that situation. Part of course of building fiscal sustainability, as the minister said, at the time of tabling the budget, and mildly so perhaps now, but is the fact that we need to grow the economy. These other measures buy us time, a sustainable way put it this way, a more effective way in the long term of correcting our situation is to do what it takes to grow the economy, and part of that is about investing in infrastructure and raising productivity in the economy. And we're going to do this in an employment-creating way, and to aid that process, one of the things that we're going to do is to skill our people. And members, honorable members, have noticed that this budget of this year funnels increased amount of resources toward the skilling of our population, occasioned in part, of course, by the Fees Must Fall campaign, which saw government allocating substantial amounts towards higher education. The regulatory environment becomes important, looking at issues of incentives and how effectively we use those, that too also becomes important. And of course, we continue to do the things that we've always been doing, but with a focus on doing them better. This committee has helped us process bills that relate to how banks are regulated, how banks that get into trouble get rescued, as you would recall in relation to, for instance, people. This happens to be a very special week in relation to that, for example. But over the long term, we are looking at strengthening how the financial sector is regulated so that we can minimize the probability of crises in that sector in future, because we are exceedingly mindful that financial crises do drag the economy down. And the last thing I'll say on the overview just of the third plan is that the office that the minister had directed the setting up of in 2013, the chief procurement officer, is now beginning to really get embedded in the system. It's beginning to show great results. We can talk to some of those later on, but this plan does cover us. The drive to automate processes, not just because they're fascinated by automation, but to the extent that automation can be used to prevent bad behavior, to save costs, in line with one of the themes of this year's budget. We are using that office to achieve that, and the processes in relation to that are moving ahead. I mean, a very concrete example of the successes made there will now come when we begin to report back at the end of this financial year and future years on the 25 billion commitment that the minister made insofar as that office has got to achieve. So we will not sweep it under the carpet. We are chasing it. Processes are underway. But we must bear in mind the financial year for the start of this started on the 1st of April, so we have not even finished the first week. So I know that honorable members may not wait for results. They may start asking how much we have saved of the 25 billion. You have to wait a little bit longer. Now, these are the aims of the Treasury. Given that the committee now is not like its first meeting, I wouldn't bore you by repeating this stuff. The last thing I would say, which is really perhaps bit new, is the operationalization of the bridge bank. The committee would know, helped by yourselves, we were able to make our first contribution to the bank, and of course subsequent ones will follow, and indeed the commitment that the minister made that our regional office will start operating early this financial year have been met. The first steps to do that have already been achieved. These are the programs that comprise the national treasury structure. Some of them combine very big divisions in the treasury, such as, for instance, programs 2 and 3, which really constitute a lot of the core of the function of the treasury. Of course, we also have parts that are connected to us slightly tenuously, but not in unimportant ways. Program 7, which deals with civil and military persons. The technical support and the part that deals with development finance institutions, and of course 9 and 10 are just in the house, which account different. These are the resources that appropriated against this vote, adding to 28 billion, rising to 32 over this period, and you can see the ups and downs insofar as the growth rate. But the growth rates here are fairly meaningless because in some of the years they are one-off, for instance, one-offs in the early parts of this. Again, this summarizes what you know. In our chapter on the E&E, you will see this information set up. This bit begins to now narrow things down and look at the classification of this information, but very importantly focusing largely on what is the core totally. Now, we have decided this time to put the administration function first. You get variation of this, because sometimes people tend to just stick with it and never go beyond it. We put it at the end. This time we're starting with it. But this is the functions. So this is the division of the, or the part of the program of the Treasury that's about providing strategic leadership, management, and support services to the department. This is the enabler, so to speak. This is the department, this the division that looks into the resourcing of the different parts of the Treasury. This is where our own corporate services is. The issue that relates to enterprise-wide risk management thereof, mitigation thereof, they sit here. It is also the division that is tasked with making sure that our retention framework and courses are implemented so that the skills that enable the department to do what it's supposed to do competently, effectively, is always done. It also provides support to the ministry, manages our ICT environment, which is challenging at times, but of course getting attention. Program 2, one of those programs that I indicated, constitutes the significant part of the bulk of the work that's done in the Treasury. For instance, the macroeconomic focus that are the foundation of the budgets that we table here, that lay the basis for the revenue to be estimated to be collected in each one of the 3 years, is the work that comes from this unit, the research work that they do at a micro and macro level comes from here. And of course, very importantly, one of the pieces of legislation that this committee sees with, which is about creating the Twin Peaks regulation system, they come from this unit. The taxation policy, that relevant chapter of the budget review, is also overseen by this program. Public finance and budget management, yet another core group of division, and you will see this in on page 31 of the strategic plan and read with 9 of the APP. These the divisions that constitute this program, they provide analysis and advice on fiscal policy and public finance, something very important. The intergovernmental financial relations, expenditure planning and prioritization, and of course the management of the very important annual budget process, which this committee oversees once it reaches Parliament. Now, over the next couple of years, as part of driving the agenda of getting value for every rent that we spend, this unit, working with, this program, let me put it that way, working with the relevant parts of government, in particular DfE, will conduct expenditure reviews and evaluations of programs with the view to determining whether there is fat in part of the system, there is wastage in part of the system, there are things that can be rationalized and done more cost-effectively or in a more cost-effective manner. So this will happen under the program. The monitoring of the resourcing of different parts of the system and how the resources are deployed happens also in this part of the system. Of course, the work that happens internally in government is also the committee that the minister chairs, the Minister's Committee on the Budget, which helps to scrutinize the budget process, give political leadership and guidance to that process, is done with the support of this program. Looking at issues of infrastructure over the next while, and reforms of even the budget process, by the way, this time around, because there is an agreement in government to look more closely at this with the view to making sure that there is even much better alignment between the outcome of that process, in other words, the budget, which is the budget, and the NDP, the National Development Plan. Part of what we'll do, we have been doing, but we're continuing to do, is the municipal standard chart of accounts. Often people wonder why this is important. It is very important when you've got 270 plus municipalities that you make sure that there is consistency in the manner in which people measure things, the manner in which people report things, so that when you compare what happens in one municipality with what happens to the next municipality or the rest of the municipalities, you are comparing apples with apples, like with like. Otherwise, you can mislead people in very big ways. One of the important roles that this program performs, which is routine but is exceedingly important, it's making sure that we liaise with provincial citizens in respect to, one, making sure that when national governments, working with provinces through the intergovernmental forum that we have, budget council, which is a statutory forum, agrees a set of priorities and therefore agrees a division of revenue to prosecute those priorities. But the budgets that are tabled in provinces, more importantly, but also even municipalities, mirror those priorities. Otherwise, the system really doesn't quite work. Second instance, this is the program that oversees, at least at the financial level, the implementation of budgets, oversight over financial management. Section 40, the Section 32, 771 reports that we publish by law required on a quarterly basis, which are initial pointers to, for instance, potential risks of underspending and possibly non-delivery, or sometimes indicate the risks of over-expenditure and therefore a violation of the appropriate legislation. This is the part that does that. So when I get to some of that detail, I'll go through it fairly quickly. These are some of the things that the function does. Perhaps let me talk a bit about that last bullet. Just misunderstood a lot, but between ourselves and DCOG, and of course working with provinces, because provinces have got a number of municipalities that are delegated to them, that they've got the primary responsibility for overseeing. Of course, it doesn't absolve us totally when it comes to the need sometimes to intervene. We do intervene under sections 100 and 139 to make sure that where there is failure, depending on the degree, to execute certain functions, national government can step in to rein in the processes that are happening there. The work of the Asset and Liability Management Program, which is just one division, Asset and Liability Management of the Treasury, is well talked about in this committee at the time of the budget, so I won't bore you with it really. But it's about maintaining the investor relations. I guess this committee must pay part of the salaries to the minister because he should be pulled in this time around because the weight was too heavy and it needs to uplift the confidence of the investors. Then the team had to solicit the support of the minister or the minister volunteer and took leadership, and then we went on a roadshow in Europe and part of the U.S. That's the investor relations management side of this. But of course, they're also about just improving what we do insofar as our capital markets are concerned. We have got a process which is fairly advanced right now to move towards an electronic trading platform of our bonds. It's been partially electronic, but I think phoning may be considered to be electronic these days. So the guys who make bids and those who offer prices, they do it by phone now. The idea with this would be to take South Africa to the next level and make sure that the trading on bonds, at least some of them, can be done electronically so that people have got the rights to do this. They can view prices real time and be able to trade these bonds in this way. We're very excited about this. It's till end now. This is a division that has also responsibility to manage our debt portfolio. The honorable members of the committee would recall that at the time of tabling the budget, the minister talks to how we have managed actively our debt, that reduction of the debt that's maturing over the next, say, 10 years by $103 billion, extending the maturity of that debt so that we reduce the risk associated with refinancing our debt, which is a very important role that this funds. Of course, they also oversee the state-owned entities, but the minister talked at length to that earlier on. Financial systems and supply chain management. I've talked about the Chief Procurement Office. I won't repeat what I said, but maybe during question and answer, if details are wanted, we can give some of them that we can give on the spot. But suffice to say, with the minister's leadership, both previously and now, earlier on, I don't quite tell what the right thing is to say, but anyway, we have identified procurement as one of the strategic functions in government. We spend I can remember, maybe this is an old number even, about 500 billion governments in different kinds of procurement. It is landline teacher support materials, leasing of buildings, infrastructure, you name all of those things. And therefore it becomes very, very important. This is a fertile ground for leakage, if it's not managed carefully. Leakage can take just the form that people overprice, they cut the prices when they know it's government, or they can be deliberate in manipulating the system to benefit themselves or people that they have got connections to. And therefore, our effort, and we always try to clarify this, we ask law enforcers, but we can design the procurement policies, the frameworks, and the administrative processes in a manner that does two things at the very least. One, makes it hard to do or engage in corrupt acts, but at the same time, increase the probability that if you do engage in those acts, you are likely to be caught. And then the rest of it depends on the other parts of the system playing their role. If they don't, then maybe even these other two parts hardly matter, certainly the second one. The big thing in this program is IFMF, which we don't capture. You have made very good progress in relation to that. If needs be, we can touch on it. I've already talked to a number of these, I think. International financial relations has on the first bullet already. Part of what this program does to support the minister and subsequently the president, or ultimately the president, in the G20, for instance, very important forum where matters of shared interest internationally are discussed, policy coordination to the extent that it can happen at that level. But also, a very important aspect of our system, which is the SACU revenue sharing arrangement. This is part of the treasury that assists with the formula, the review thereof for this. The work relating to the rest of the continent and how we interact with it, certainly from a financial point of view, is also managed here, and our relationships with the World Bank and the IMF to the extent that we have, for instance, the country partnership strategy. This division coordinates it. But of course, the country partnership strategy is a collective outcome, or call it output, of how South Africa wants to interact with the rest of the world, insofar as this part of the system is concerned. Now, I indicated earlier on that this is a part that we connect with somewhat tenuous. By law, Minister and I, still Minister of the Executive Authority for this, account also for this, but of course HIPAA has got a CEO. Very important is because this is dealing with people who, in one way or another, have fled South Africa, but now have got to be taken care of once they have reached retirement. And there has been a modernization process underway here, transferring the learning from the running of the, call it, standard type pensions from the GPF versus the ones that are called non-GPF for now. And there are very valuable developments. The minister, I don't know if it was during the time at the new CEO or a point, but anyway, there's a relatively new CEO there. The city is already getting quite warm now. He has been around and he has made tremendous progress in dealing with some of the things that troubled us in relation to to this program. Sadly, I've reached the end of this presentation.
DG, in fact, it's a very accurate summary of what you have here, and it gives us more time for questions. Right, over to members. Mr. Lee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the DG and the Minister. Chair, I would like to start with some questions of probably clarity from the Minister. You know, there are some statements that the minister has made that it's unsettling to me, and I would love to get more clarity on them. The minister alluded to something to the effect that there's some attempt to limit what Treasury can do. And what are those limitations? And how are you dealing with those limitations or constraints? The second one that does bother me a bit, I'm not sure whether, I mean, you've made a very important statement here that, you know, the expectations of credit rating agencies and international monetary institutions is that they're no longer interested in plans, but they want to see concrete milestones. Now, I just want to hear probably more about what exactly, other than just the roadshows, because to me the roadshows are important, and I think they're very important in communicating our own story and in trying to get in trying to calm down the matter. But I do have a challenge with actually doing this within the context of uncertainty amongst the critical partners at home, especially in the financial financial space, probably public finance space. And by that, I'm not so sure whether the minister, they have finally found a way of handling the matters between the commissioner and then the minister, because, I mean, I listened to the minister the other day on TV. I mean, it was fantastic, the contributions that we're making. But I also listened to the commissioner in FBFM, and there was just something was disjointed there from both. You could see, I mean, from anybody, any ordinary South African, and I consider myself an ordinary South African as well, I'm not sure if we are handling that matter well, because if you are going to be going to external parties, you've got to have some kind of stability within, you know, so that whatever story that you are communicating, it's a story that has a buy-in at home. It's not just something that is coming, you know, that's disjointed. Now, I think this is a major respect to me, where I am seated, and I would love to hear what are we doing about that. The other one is the tax exposure, this tax evasion exposure. I don't know. Can somebody assist us? You need to know how far, okay. I want to know, maybe if you ascertained, I know they said it's about over 1 million something pages, and that's terrifying, because it includes 11 million, yeah. Now, I don't know. In that 11 million whatever pages, what is South Africa's, you know, exposure to that, and what are we doing about it? What is the plan going forward? I know that we called on those that are probably involved in this to come forward. Have we been seeing any progress in that respect? Are people coming forward, you know, to say, you know, we have done this, and How far are we with what you have announced, Minister, which I thought was a fantastic intervention, but one would really want to hear what is happening there. And I think from the Minister's side, there should be something that probably the final one that I wanted also Minister to probably comment on. You know, as a political leader in that department, you have a much greater responsibility in terms of championing a macroeconomic policy that that speaks to the real issues, and that you've outlined that in the mandate of National Treasury and so forth. But where I would love the minister to probably comment on, because this is a broad macroeconomic policy issue, is the frightening trend that we are beginning to observe in South Africa. If the inflation is going up, the unemployment is going up at the same time, both these things are going up, and I know that we do like to comment on more on the, you know, those short-term public works thing and probably better than here and there. But to me, that's not necessarily sustainable. And I'm not suggesting that probably we are facing a fiscal cliff if we do not address these problems. But unfortunately, from where I am sitting, if we do not do something within the next 5 years, 10 years, maybe we will actually wake up and actually find that we have now which the fiscal cliff. And to me, that is a worry. And maybe the minister can assist us in clarifying the issue. DG, there are issues that you raise this, and I also to understand. You must understand. I understand the difficulty environment that you are operating under. I'm not at all underestimating the complexity of the environment and so forth. But you know, DG, the thing is, when we are talking about the plan, all the different programs that we have. And I'm looking at major budget speech statement around issues of fiscal consolidation. I'm not sure if there are things that are really concrete that you can say these are the true indicators that, you know, we are in that fiscal consolidation. And the reason why I'm saying that, and these are observations, I'm just my observations. If you look at provinces in particular, I mean, I see provinces spending more money on advertising, but that is true. I mean, and in fact, if you go to provinces, you would find every other minister is as big billboards, you know, everywhere. And to me, that does not speak to the environment of fiscal consolidation. What are we doing about that? And again, I'm going to zoom into premier's offices. To me, obviously, premier's offices are more of coordination, you know, they are coordination structures. Can we really look at what, you know, look at this different, or maybe set a benchmark, or maybe set some standards for premiers to say, you know, you shall not go above this, you know, in terms of employment and so forth. And I remember at some stage there was some very scary figure of a premier who employs so many people in the office, you know. And you ask yourself, what is happening here? When we need more money to spend on infrastructure, if we are saying we have to, you know, we have to play a role in promoting and in promoting economic growth, obviously we need to be looking very closely and non-essential stuff that we are spending on. And maybe the DG might be able to assist me there in terms of what exactly are we doing about this. You have alluded to the fact that, you know, there is something that you are doing, but I'm not sure if it was clear enough in terms of the measurable things that we can see, that, you know, this is an indicator that we can say, wow, this thing is happening, we can feel it. Because right now, maybe it is happening at a national level, I don't know, but from what we are observing in different areas, it seems to me it's something that doesn't tally. Okay. And the chair, the issue of our SOEs, especially those that are threatening our contingent liability, and the minister did raise this issue around the contingent liability, that if you get a situation where, you know, currently you make an example of ESCO, that they've already spent about 200 billion out of the 350 of debt currently. Now, when we met with the respective churches in those SOEs, to understand that, listen, you are actually putting government at risk here, because if you actually complete this or something happens to you, we actually have to find that money. And where are we going to find that money? Is there sufficient appreciation of what National Treasury is trying to do? Are these SOEs, are we engaging with these SOEs on a regular basis and monitoring them on a regular basis, given the risk that we are confronted with? Or are we just, saying, well, they will have to do what they can? But what are, maybe that means a stronger term, probably, what are the punitive measures that we are considering in order to get everybody to toe the line? Because we can't treat this situation as usual. And the other thing, I think that speaks to the program, the deals with, it speaks to Program 7. I am concerned, PG, about the kind of the narrative that is getting out there about the PIC. I think one of the articles, I think it was in the Business Day or something like that, where they were saying the PIC is really, they sometimes take decisions, investment decisions that are unwise, especially to those that are affected and that is your weapon, especially on the active sector, where they actually increase their investment despite the fact that they could see there was something wrong. What are we doing in terms of actually dealing with that state? And secondly, I also want to know, is there any concrete steps that we are taking in terms of consolidating or, in terms of reforming the whole retirement reform, especially when it comes to us? And I raised this thing when Minister Ntaka was still the minister, that it's hypocritical for us as public office bearers. Our funds are managed somewhere else. and they are managed by a private company, but we are many, the employees, government employees, are actually administered by our own institution and not necessarily by a private company. What are we doing about that? And again, I'm going to labor on this one, because I really feel that the local government pension fund industry, we have not paid sufficient attention to it. And I do believe that there is a lot of, right now we need to be consolidating those areas as far as I'm concerned. And I'm worried that we still have over 800 pension funds in local government. And what are we doing about that? Because that is also speaking to your strengthening the PIC, because pension has a very important role. It has an important role. I don't have to go further on that one. And the other one, Chair, I'm sorry, I just have two more. That one.
We've
got to one.
Okay. So
feel free. Okay, thank you very much. Because sometimes you intimidate me when you look at me, I saw your glasses going down and I thought you were saying, stop now.
That I don't have to ask many of these questions because I was going to ask them anyway. This is my job for me. I need to set this up myself.
Okay. Now, PG, you've made a very important point, which I agree, that saying we now need to scale our population. You need to focus on scaling our population. And one of the things that is a major concern to me is that in as much as we say that, I think we are not necessarily focusing on the real issues in terms of scaling. I'm not sure if we as, I don't know if it's your stage or probably would be seen as encroaching, if you begin to engage with the Department of Higher Education, especially around the issue of CIPAS. I'm not sure if we are really getting valuable money from CIPAS, because to me, the concern is that we can't be focusing on universities. Universities are in a knowledge industry. They're not, yes, maybe there is an element of skills there, but largely a university is a knowledge industry. And again, even there in universities, my main concern is that the failure rate at universities is serious. I mean, there is an estimation of about 50% of first students fail or drop out or whatever. And to me, it's saying, are we going to keep on putting money there? We can say, no, it's fine. And I agree, well, maybe we might say that. But the reality is, are we, if we are saying we are going to be bailing out universities or whatever, but if we look at the issues of output, quality outputs and impacts and so forth, because to me, then if we are not going to be looking at that, we will keep on addressing issues, monetary issues, which are not necessarily the real issues. To me, the issues about the output now, you know, and why do we have such a high failure rate, and are we focusing on the real stuff, and also the sitters, are they really talking their game, and are they, do we have concrete indicators to say by the end of the year, maybe let's say construction sitter, let's see a percentage of, you know, people who are still in these particular areas, whatever sitters that you have. Are we, or maybe because it's not your space, you're not engaging in it, but in terms of where you are positioned, and this leads to a question that you were saying about the limitation of national treasury, which I'm worried about because I'm not sure if it's speaking to all these issues, but at the same time, I agree you don't, you are not a super minister, but at the same time, you are having a very important role to play here in ensuring that, you know, financial stability, the financial management of public resources, it's really, you know, unfortunately for you, and I don't envy you right now, but unfortunately, that's inescapable. You have to confront that. And finally, is the issues around regional integration. The issues around regional integration, I'm glad that you are beginning to do something around SACU and looking at the whole, you know, I know you have some challenges there with SACU, but my main concern is that no matter where you go in South Africa, especially in the metropolitan areas, we are producing, the economy is producing jobs, but the jobs that we are producing, especially in the tourism sector, and your restaurants and stuff like that, your petrol stations and so forth, you are actually having a large contingent of foreigners in those places, which means that you are now, I think, what is his name, by the way, from Kosadu said, we've allowed other countries to outsource their economic problems to South Africa. What is his name? The guy from Kosadu? Matthew said, you know, we are allowing, you know, our neighboring countries to outsource their economic problems to us. And this is not a, yes, we, I'm not saying we shouldn't have foreigners, but I'm saying if those countries prosper, so is South Africa. If those countries do not prosper and they have challenges, obviously it affects South Africa, because people wouldn't have been coming to South Africa if their countries were offering them the similar kind of opportunities that they find here. So I am saying, is there any engagement with the neighboring countries to begin to talk about this issue? Because this, whether we like it or not, this thing does affect our fiscal challenge. Because at the end of the day, these people, they may not be paying your taxes, even if when they spend, they are spending, but you know that there are so many issues that relate, that link them to where we are, and therefore that area to me is important, and I would like to hear what you have to say on this issue. You don't have to have the details on this, but I would just love to hear you maybe, you know, giving some kind of, you know, account of what is actually happening around the issues that I raised. Thank you.
I have to clarify, as far as I know, there's nothing in the Rules Committee, I see Advocate Jenkins has left, but Alan can say that if a chairperson is lowering his or her spectacle, therefore it must taper off, right? Because think about it, what about those who don't wear spectacles? No, I don't, it's such a rule. Secondly, the minister knows you for a very long time. You were in your nappies at the time of the name, right? So she's a homegirl, as you know. And therefore she gets a lot of time here. I thought you were a wacky committee city, so I mean, without telling him, I thought you from KZN, but I gather you're not, so you won't have much time as she does, right? Originally from me. Yeah, okay, but that doesn't qualify the way she does. But on a more serious note, I think, Minister, when you say 12:30, I think it should mean tomorrow 12:30. Because if you have to answer those questions. But look, Makosi, not a single question. Can I raise with you, Minister, because you're back here after I saw you on elsewhere. The questions that Makosi asked are actually, for the most part, even of almost all parts, what she and others have been raising here for 2 years. And what I think it signals is, despite the overwhelming responsibilities you and the department have, and despite the very complex way you're handling it, there's not enough progress being made on many of these issues. And the other thing that I want to do, is something we don't care about, we don't need to discuss it now. And I think you on your side as the executive, where does our role begin and end this? When does keep raising, like you put something on our agenda now, which you write about. And I've been warding off this thing, the committee members have been raising it. That on state-owned entity, for example, right? The financial management belongs to SCOF, strictly speaking. The governance and other issues belongs to the Department of Public Enterprise Committee, the Policy Committee. Yet if you try as SCOF, and I'm sure you have as a minister, to sort of tread in that area, people say, hey, that's our area. And to bring the two committees together, because we won't proceed there without involvement of the public enterprises portfolio committee. We just won't. And people will be very cooperative, but bring the two of us together, as Sean was going to in frustration, took us 6 months the last time, to consider one report of a similar disposition. It began like that. In fact, the research has raised it. It is our role. Every now and then it comes to public sector reach for and so on. So when the minister, that's about to slip, of course, when of course you said that, you're a super ministry, but history or whatever has now put you in this position, right? I think there's much more empathy for that than maybe you appreciate from that. The same thing to say is that there is something that, how politics operates. Those who always define national strategy as neoliberal and almost any within the movement, and now some of them say, no, national treasury is our real price. So how things have changed, right? And others are seeing national treasury even more now than ever before in the movement and in society out there as a problem. They could present itself as the only custodian of the defense of the constitution and of the laws and of all the values of our and in the government and so on. So I know it's difficult, but this is an issue that we need to discuss also with you as state sector. So what I want to say is a lot of questions I know. What I want to ask is, what members feel should we allow, because so many of your questions are not subjective and individualistic, so to speak. They represent the corpus of issues that the committee has in some other room. Then we come back to the next set of questions. I know, or we're going to take this leaf, to be fair, and then we'll come back to the others, because there'll be too many questions. And in fact, many of the questions I want to ask are actually covered, I think, not only in the question, but in how you, I think, likely to respond. So let's take this leaf, and then we'll come back to Pinky in the second half, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, thank you to Makosi for the questions. Many of them are on my list here as well, so I shan't have too many. DG, let me skip that one then, Minister. Let me see here. Minister, let me just go straight to one that I think Makosi and the Chair have alluded to in terms of SOEs. I'm also keen to see some guidance as to how exactly we do that. But the one that springs to mind, obviously, straight away, is the SAA one, which falls under your ambit, therefore, as falls under us as well. And so I think there that's a relatively easy one, and we will, according to the program, unless there are further disruptions to it, we'll be dealing quite soon. And I would love to, I don't know how protocol works, but I'd love to have you around when we do that, so that you assist us and guide us where we can.
The minister or DG to be, deputy minister to be, as we did the last time.
Yes, somewhat from the executive, so that would be great. Thank you very much. Then, Minister, in terms of the BRICS Bank, I'm jumping around now, so please forgive me if I thought for this. The allocation is 3.8 billion, I think, if I'm correct. Has Treasury done any kind of forward-looking as to what kind of returns we're going to get on the investments in BRICS Bank as a country? I mean, it's probably a difficult one because projects have to be submitted, and but I mean, is there any idea of what we're likely to get out of that from a financial and infrastructural point of view? Other, yeah, forget any political issues. I'm not homing on political issues. I'm just trying to see. Oh, here we are. Minister, the question of the procurement office. I mean, I think it's something that many of us are really kind of excited about and watching. But what frightens me a little bit, and I'm not speaking for my party or anything, I think the kind of concern when there was a suggestion that Kenneth might not stay on. And it suddenly set me thinking about, you know, we can't have an institution as important as this kind of relying his reputation or whatever you like to call it, relying on one person, and I know that he's important. I was just wondering whether, you know, my thoughts were irrelevant on that one. And then, you know, I know that the DG, you spoke about this, but it might be something for the minister. Well, perhaps not. The review of the SACU agreement that is underway. I mean, it's such a broad subject. It's a historical issue. It's a question of stability of our neighbors. It's a question of trying to instill democracy in a country like Swaziland. It's more than just finances. And I was wondering how that review was going and you know, whether we could see anything coming up. Okay, I'm sorry, I seem to have more questions, Chairman, than I thought I had. I apologize if I'm taking your time. The expenditure reviews, I mean, I think that's, and we as a party think it's essential, and thank you very much for undertaking them. Have we got some program for their timelines of how we're going to go on that? The comment about budget alignment with NDP is great. I think it's just a comment from me. The comment would be, I hope that there's buy-in from the whole cabinet on that, and I'm sure you'll say there is. I mean, I'm not asking a question, I'm making a statement. Then, DG, in terms of the municipal charter of accounts, I mean, as bookkeeper, I'm quite excited about that because my experience with municipalities is there's so many different systems, some are huge and cumbersome, but the question is, how do we get that implemented? Is there room for National Treasury to kind of enforce that? And how do you get the best system in place? You know, I mean, we could force a system in which actually isn't the best. I think it's a great project. I'm just wondering how we're going to implement it and get the best of it. Electronic trading is always, I mean, I do electronic banking all the stuff, but I mean, electronic trading has microseconds delays between information getting to where it has to, and I don't know how these things work with trading where people get advantage, like insider trading advantage. I trust that's going to be very tricky. Jim, the question of skills is a tough one, and of course he quite likely hits it on the head. To the importance of it, and I with her don't really see how National Treasury can get directly involved. But from a financial point of view, I think there has to be a way to do it. I take my own example, Mr. Chairman, and like you, I'm 38, I was going to be a university engineer graduate originally. I mean, there's no question about it. I was going to get to university. Well, I failed horribly. And I dropped out in June, to be honest, after the June exams. I didn't think I passed a single exam. So I went and did an apprenticeship because my father said, no, you don't do something useful. And I did that. And I became an apprentice electrician. I became an electrician and all the rest. And then later in life, I then paid for myself to do an accounting degree. But the point I'm trying to make is that my father was probably at fault in not saying, don't do the university, go do a trade. And rest his soul, he would be 107 or 8 if he were alive today. But I think as a state, we have an obligation to do what negotiate. I think, and I don't want to put words, let me say it to myself, what we have an obligation to guide more emphatically. Now, I don't know that that's the National Treasury, that's true. But how the money is spent perhaps may assist with that guidance. The PIC investment premises is something that is of concern, but it has been raised. Panama, how many million pages I'm quite comfortable you won't find my name there, so at least consider them very carefully. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We suggested, because of the large number of questions, can we take them further? Are you okay with that? Are you the reason?
Okay, I fine, go for it.
Chair. I think I have very few issues because Marcos covered me on a number of them. If you look at the two presentations, Chair, I think one is sort of comfortable with the assistance that are being treasury to be equal to the task, especially when the DG said, even the Chief Procurement Officers Committee unit is now up in place and we start to see things happening. My issue, Chair, is more on transversal issues. And I think my comrades also spoke to that. If you look at what the Minister was saying around growth and around the capacity to implement the plans, And what the DG was saying, that infrastructure will be a catalyst to mitigate on the unemployment issues and other things. And you look at the national view, overview of the state, the three spheres, and how other spheres impact in an indirect way, negatively, on what we want to see happening. I mean, from the growth point and from the capacity to implement the plans, how other spheres are unable to spend and all these things. So I know it's a transversal issue, and I know it's treasury that also provides this conditional grants, whether through DORA or through whatever, or even through own revenue by municipalities, for instance. It's important going forward that we also go closely to some of these things so that all of those are able to contribute towards that growth that we want to talk to and the capacity to implement the plans that we have. Because those will also bring unintended consequences that the Minister also spoke to. Given the global challenges that we are faced with, not only South Africa, but everywhere else. Now, the other issue, Chair, is that if you listen to SSA and you listen to Finance and Fiscal Commission, and this is what I want as we go on doing in-year monitoring with Treasury, let's look at the things that SSA pick up on the NDP, because the other time they even said, here's the NDP, here's the budget, but the budget does not speak to what we said we're going to do in the NDP. These are the priorities of the NDP and all this. So when we do in-year monitoring, let's start to look at those. What the contribution of some of these agencies that are ours, that are able to assist us, to be on our toes to implement certain things, the Finance and Fiscal Commission and SSA, and see whether all of us are in line in terms of some of the things. But they have faced as well for us to improve on some of the things that we want to achieve. The last thing, Chair, I fully agree with Comrade Magosi on the PIC thing. You know, the other time when we were in London, through our trip on the Twin Peaks, we were with Honorable Zwambo and he had a big book written, Who Owns Whom? And that book had, I don't know where he got it. So, the bigger chunk of that book shows all the investments that the PSC has done. And the question is, are we everywhere, are we hands-on as PIC in all those investments? Because somewhere we must be chairpersons of those boards, somewhere we must be this and that, we must be on decision-making, or we just throw in this money like this and invest and not care and just wait for dividends, whether we are getting what is due to us accordingly and so on. So I agree with Makosi that maybe the firm suggestion I want to do that, not have a session with PIC at some point as a committee, and then be able to find each other on some of these things regarding their investment in kitchen.
Thank you, sir. You covered me in 99%. Lessons learned in terms of the Session 100 intervention in Limpopo. I believe that intervention has been terminated totally. The other point raised by Honorable Member there regarding the provinces, just for information, during the course of May, our Finance Committee and NCOP are calling all 9 provincial treasuries to report on their fiscal position. And giving that picture, you get the whole picture of the provincial department spending, including the Premier's office. So we are zooming into that because we took them on their report of August 2015 and see what progress has been made. Also referring to the liabilities of that province. Unauthorized expenditure, wasteful expenditure, and accruals. So, just to mention this to the minister, that report will then be submitted also to the minister. Very important in terms of the plans. We saw the plans here. Refer back to intergovernmental relations. If we succeed there, Chairperson, the rest will also succeed. But zoom into monitoring and evaluation. It's done at a provincial level, but it must boil down to regions. I can't pick it up because I take my own region where I'm deployed. As HOD sit once a week in a HOD forum, the regional directors or regional managers must also sit once a week in a regional forum to get across cutting issues. Referring to roads, to fund public works, schools, hostels to be renovated. It's public works that step in, intergovernmental relations, and then the spending perspective. Thank you, Chair. I'll finish. Thank you.
Just to let committee members, I haven't asked any questions, but given the number of questions asked, I think I'll hold away for now. But it's my responsibility to draw the committee's attention, obviously, to what the research unit has done, Yolanda Brown and the team. Yolanda, your first two questions are already raised, right, in some form or another. Question 3 there at the end, it's on page 8, is it? It says, the 2016 CNE indicates that National Treasury intends to finalize a 3 Davis Tax Committee interim report over the medium term. The National Treasury should provide the Standing Committee on Finance with some deadlines on this one. I understand it's complex, challenging. You've got a million things on your plate. As Makosi says, she doesn't envy you. I think all of us probably will share that. And the next question she asks is, National Treasury indicates that in the 2016 E&E, that there's no need to make provision for transfers over the medium term to the Land and Agricultural Development Bank and the DBSA. Is the Standing Committee on Finance to infer from this that these two development finance institutions are fully capitalized and are fully sound, financially sound? If you could respond to that question. Then to refer members to last year's report, please note these are none of my questions, right? So, if the committee is concerned, okay, on the first one, very quickly, we must report, we're also reporting on ourselves, whether we're doing the things we said we will do in respect of our oversight. The quarterly reports are getting better, I must say, Minister. The only thing we've raised with the DG, and it's a serious thing, is that often he's not available, and understandably. You know, it's not that if you have some other small part of the country or whatever. And so we're pretty juggling this around. I think then all the responsibilities, the DG is not available, senior DDG should come. We don't require the minister, deputy minister, to be every quarter. We look at both the budget of the department and performance and the South African Revenue Service. Point two, we said last year, we said, Mr. DG, that when you report each year on the budget vote, you should actually respond to our recommendations from the previous year, which what the minister did last year. Obviously, the minister, a new minister may not have been apprised of that. Point three is that, the point was also another three. We want more synergy between the NDP and the budget, and you saying yourself that you're going to reform the budget process to effect that. Maybe you want to talk about how you're going to do that. Four is, okay, so other issues are covered, which is around the war room and ESCOM and so on, and we feel Treasury play a more active role in that regard. Then there's, if you raise that seat this year, DG, so maybe you want to tell the committee about building on what we asked last year. You get your chance. I'm just doing my work as a committee chair. This is what you, I think, didn't vote for. So, but the committee voted on the line of two parties. Sheila, you're saying that you have to do all of this in respect of the energy sector to ensure growth. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's really cynical because some people argue the reason we're able to manage our load shedding, especially the avoid load shedding remarkably,
is because the economy slowed down so much. So, hey, what's the big deal? Other days, the management at SOC were doing very well. I don't know, my sense is a combination of both, but you want to dwell on that a bit. But there are things that actually ESCOM does, but does raise questions. About, for example, not fighting some ideological or political issue, what can ESCOM justify? Is it correct? 46 million rands that they get for this new age breakfast? I mean, is that something that's acceptable to the Public Enterprises Committee? I don't know. I will speak to Jibo and find out whether they haven't questioned that. I'm not questioning whether that new age policing has got any value or whatever. Probably it does. I don't know. But is that a correct thing for an issue? What does the SOE get in return by doing that? And then the issue arises about non-strategic assets and so on that you want to dispose of. It's not an ideological tongue, Minister. It's about a policy one. We say, what criteria does Treasury use in deciding this? So we asked this last year. We questioned it, but I think at the next quarterly report, maybe we can have a discussion about that. And let you know that so that we send the questions beforehand, which facilitates a more productive exchange between your team and ourselves. We want to know a bit more about that because it's not an ideological thing on whether you should privatize and so on. You know, so much as us. What other criteria are you using? Then last year we asked about integrated financial systems. Yeah, nothing in your input today. Perhaps you want to comment on that. Then we welcome the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. In fact, I think the key is right to somebody else. We should actually have a special meeting on that. Can you know that, Alan, please? Yolanda and our new friend, you're going to just help us announce that, right? And the two people from TBO, so we don't lose out. Then the different pension funds, Makoshi from day one, Minister. He's obsessed with this issue. And actually, yes, he keeps raising the thing and needs some sort of more concerted reply. We know that issue is a very difficult one. Then last year, okay, we skipped that one because we passed it, right? But he also asked about, well, we didn't say much about BRICS, but I think it's covered now. Not that one committee was the same question at least, but some bit more progress, maybe in the next quarter of where things are. Because bank, so far as the regional office in Johannesburg is concerned. Then Makosi's point, which he forgot to raise by Makosi, the Property Rates Act. It must be applied to people who have properties of a certain value, irrespective of where they're located. I think the subtext of what he says, sometimes the text, is that in the communal areas, land areas, the traditional authority areas, is it correct that, you know, let's say they're enforcing somebody who's got a big fat three-story house with a CD bend or two in a driveway, should be exempt from paying rent? This is a matter that I played different roles in the past, some of you might know or not know, and I can't even remember what role I played when. The issue has been on the agenda from, I think, 2004, Minister, when we, in the Committee of Local Government, looked at the Property Rates Act. The majority, by the way, felt that the traditional issue should pay then. We were persuaded by the executive for political reasons, presumably the election was coming up and all that. Right. No different from any other party anywhere in the world. We didn't want to antagonize the constituents. But you can be clear, Minister, Gigi. The majority, in fact, I can't think of a single person in that local government committee of 2004
Well, one was key thing towards saying maybe we should not do it. The rest of the ANC wanted it. It is now 11 years later. And hey, all of us are required to wake up with 0.5% to 0.9% growth rate. There are no bots here, you know. Nobody's a public constitution. Nothing the constitution says is traditional leaders. It says, as part of the argument, the customs and traditions must be respected, and so it must be. We have Europe, yeah. They respect, the Queen is still there in England, for all the claims about post-modernity. But it doesn't say they exempt from the, it says to the extent it's consistent with the Bill of Rights and Constitution. So that issue, Minister, we just lingering, it's going to take, and of course she forgot to raise it, and I'm sure the next time she's going to batter up with it, and she's right to do so. She's right to do so. Never mind that she has to go for a home and other reasons to traditional authority areas, and they might be watching what she's saying there. The fact is, we're just dragging on. And just rest to us from our course for no other reason, raising it again in our own articulate, vigorous way. In short, you do something about it. You have to deal with the officer, you have to deal with the presidency on these issues, but in some modest, incremental way, can't you move towards that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. We have written to all ministers and deputy ministers to ask them questions about the amount of money we spend on the Gupta platforms, including that breakfast that you speak about, where Eskom is paying 1 million rand or more per issue. And it comes out that for ministers to appear on that show, they must pay about 520,000 rand each. If the appear bill is more than 1 million rand. And those are the responses that we got from the ministers who have responded. Trump has not yet responded in terms of the amount of money which is being spent. We really need some sense of accountability of how does government spend so much money to appear on a television show which the public broadcaster in normal circumstances should be a platform where people appear without paying anything. And we will get out on the final numbers of how much money is spent even on the newspaper itself by various departments and which in many instances does not correlate with the AS, like the number of newspapers which are distributed by the publication. As a treasurer, you should either maybe give accountability, but also if there isn't accountability on it, possibly provide guidance on how certain expenses should be handled, because it's not fiction that there is lots of wasteful expenditure that is directed towards Gupta programs. It's one of the things I was looking to put up. I'm also interested in understanding the SARS restructuring process which the minister apparently or reportedly had said must stop, because when the commissioner was doing the post-interview after the 1 trillion announcement, was saying that if the restructuring had been stopped as a result of the minister's instruction, SARS would have collected 10 billion rand less than it did. What are the motive on the instruction, if it did happen, that the restructuring of SARS must stop, and how far is the process? Because what gets reported is that they are either personal or professional differences between the Commissioner of SARS and the Minister of Finance. What is happening? Because we obviously need to have a stable relationship. But really, when I see here in the report which is presented that there are efforts to deal much more effectively with the illicit financial flows and tax.
You mean people have been covered by Makosi, you were not here?
Right? Oh, yeah. It probably has been dealt with. And maybe that has been covered as well, because I wanted to get a concrete reflection on the whole Panama revelations. Yeah. Particularly that the Nkulubu says Zuma has got accounts. Everyone else in the world is taking accountability. Is their accountability being taken here in South Africa? Because there seem to be conflict linkages between the President of the Republic and his cousin, son, or corrupt his cousin, son. I don't know what it's called, but something of that kind of relationship. So,
it may shock you to others, but even when you're not here, these questions do get raised. Right? Don't be traumatized. You're redundant. There's nothing you say that hasn't been raised. It's done the other way. You'll have to resign now from the EFF. But on a more serious note, look, the question a chairperson has to ask, I'm surprised nobody else has asked it. Since Floyd has raised, that's the new one he has raised, right? In the angle he uses slightly new. It's actually, as you know, comrades, we have the norm since I came here, and I perfectly agree with it, is we have SARS and the DG and the department and the minister at the same time. Now this year we don't, because the minister did write to us to say, and I think to the speaker, to say that the staff plan APP of the SARS has not been approved and he asked for an extension, which is controlled by the speaker's office. And we need to have some progress report because we have a quarterly review of SARS and especially sometime in when it is, you've got the program. And secondly, we can't do that until we've done the other half of the work here. So we need some progress report. And obviously I'm saying to Minister, we understand the complexity, perhaps more than you think some of us do, and the challenges, and the difficulties. And really, we're very sympathetic. But it cannot drag on. This asked a request for an extension, which is in the Speaker's office, is hopefully the last. And we've set a date, 2 or 3 weeks into May, where we have to have the essay. And I recently say this, Minister, and you'll appreciate too, is because when it's over, we come back, I think, in the middle of August. So for a whole period, from 18th of November, to around August next year, we wouldn't have an essay before us. That would not be accepted. So can we offer this meeting to discuss that? But in some form or another, it's non-negotiable unless there's somebody wants to raise their hand there. That essay has to appear. Otherwise, we're in dereliction of our duty. Thank you.
Let me firstly thank the honourable members for very, very extensive questions. Let's see how we can answer them in the limited time we have available. But we'll find more time if necessary to deal with some of this. I think the honourable member, Makosi, raised very important questions about how we project a positive image of ourselves as a country and as an investable destination, both in the real economy and elsewhere, when we have the kind of what you politely call uncertainties in the domestic environment. The plus side is that there's probably no country in the world that doesn't have some domestic uncertainty. The minor side is that when you're an emerging market that has some uncertainty, then you have our situation as emerging markets watched a lot more carefully. And in particular, the politics. So nobody will worry about ratings versus the possibility of Mr. Trump becoming the President of the United States at this stage. Whereas if something like that happened here, you would probably get downgraded overnight as well. So that's, if you like, standards. But then those who have money can call the shots. Those who don't have the money can dictate some of these sorts of developments. And what we try to do as a Treasury is to put our best foot forward, if you like, on behalf of the country. And on this particular roadshow, we are very fortunate to have a few representatives from the business sector and later all the union federations joining us as well. So in that sense, it was a very good collective and national effort to and it's not just to sell ourselves, but it's also to understand what are the thought processes outside the country. What are they looking at? Which is a very useful form of feedback for us. And that's the only basis one can talk about words like milestones and so on, because those are the questions that we ask. In advance, they ask questions about our politics as well. what are our plans in relation to milestones? We've got, it's called a short-term plan. This is what we're working on with unions and with the private sector and the departments in government. We have about 6 weeks left. I just got an SMS just now saying one of the rating agencies will be here in about 6 weeks' time, another one as well. And let's see what we can put on the table by then as a country, not withstanding whatever it is that is happening. The issue of what I call constraints on the Treasury is largely to reflect, very frankly, that what happened in December in the Treasury was a very traumatic event. Traumatic for the country, traumatic for our own internal stability, and traumatic for the South as well. And although we politely want to put that away at some stage, as the old new minister, however you want to put it, it's something that we have to deal with in trying to stabilize the situation and recognize the kind of transversal role, as some of you have pointed out, that the Treasury plays. The Panama stroke tax expose, I mean, this is quite sensational. It's about 11 million pieces of documents, and one report I read said there's 55 South Africans that might be involved. But I've asked the various agencies, as you saw from my press statement, that they should look into all of this and see what are the implications for South African taxpayers. So the phenomenon of tax havens doesn't and isn't limited to Panama. It's any more in the world. And although we are now moving into the era of automatic exchange of information, that in itself is still at the lower end of what is required in order to get optimal transparency, to actually detect how financial flows are actually taking place, which of those flows represent tax evasion and aggressive avoidance, and what is the tax due in the domestic environment or the domicile environment that these people actually live in. The plan going forward must be that we want more exposés of the sort, so that the space for people who have ill-gotten gains or well money made in the proper kind of way pay the taxes that are due in their respective domestic environments. And this is directly connected to the kind of fiscal space and fiscal capability that each country has. On the one hand, we say, take the South African example, we are undergoing tough fiscal consolidation, but we might well be losing billions in tax, both from ill-gotten gains and from money legitimately made in South Africa, but on which no taxes are paid. And that is where corruption and defrauding of the state comes in as well. And it's in our interest to ensure that we act. You would have seen the numbers of the voluntary disclosure program. I think some 6 billion was collected over a period of time. And we're extending it for another 6 months. And that, hopefully, these sort of exposés will give encouragement for people to actually come forward. You raised an important point about how do we see the next few years. So you said 5 or 10. And that if we don't do something substantial, not only will we reach a fiscal cliff, we'll reach many other cliffs as well. So that's why some of us have been trying to inspire a greater sense of urgency on the one hand, and a great level of national consensus on how do we get growth, because growth is at the heart of the problems, including how do we get better inclusion of the vast majority of blacks in the economy, and addressing the issues of inequality and poverty and unemployment as well. So that is something that, you know, Chair, although it's a very bad year, should, under your guidance, we can work out how we get a bigger conversation going. Because there's no, as I repeatedly say, there's no textbook on growth. It's very nice if somebody had a formula which says if you put A and B and C together, and you know, I have a pharmacy background, put these three chemicals together and it'll give you gold or something like that. Each country has its own idiosyncrasies that have to be taken into account, and some imagination needs to be applied to dealing with these issues as well. The DG will give you the indicators of fiscal consolidation, but the deficit will be one of them. Reducing debt over time, or the debt per GDP will be another one, but he'll give you a more comprehensive answer. On the South issues that several colleagues have raised, all I want to do at this stage, out of politeness, is to say, just give me a little bit more time to see how we manage the situation better. At the press conference at SARS, I described this as work in progress. So I think that we, with your permission, Chair, come back to you. You've been asking now whether it's just his bosses or whether he's awake. No, Mr. On the question of provinces and between his offices and municipalities, yeah, we have lost some ground, let's be frank, in the last, say, 2 years. We had some cooperation around 2013, 2014. We've gone back to our bad habits, not only in terms of advertising, but many other things, including paying for the kind of events that Honorable Shivambu was talking about as well. So we will reassert cabinet decisions that have been made in this regard, but one expects good sense from municipal leaders and provincial leaders, that they are dealing with public money and they need to deal with this public money with appropriate discretion and respect for the public. That is, when you become disrespectful of the public, or what some organizations will call masses, and think you run your own show that the public can be kept ignorant of, whereas the public is actually very keenly aware of what we do. They know who steals and who doesn't steal, to put it more bluntly, in the public domain, particularly because people like to be ostentatious about those things. But we want to, in the coming year, Chair, depending on capacity, take a much more careful look, and with the kind of, if you like, experiment that the Treasury has undertaken in terms of Section 216 of the Constitution, we should see what other measures, similar measures, can be taken to enforce stricter discipline, but also in the first instance, persuade people to do the right things as is required by the current circumstances. On SOEs, yes, we do monitor the financial situation on a regular basis. There are strict conditions that are attached to the guarantees that are given, and particularly when the guarantees are utilized. The Director General again can give you some details on that. And of course, what we have at the moment is the Deputy President is leading a process with Minister of Public Enterprises and myself, and later others as well, to now more assertively promote a program of reform for state-owned enterprises. So I think by the time perhaps we get back after the elections, we'll have a lot more to share with you, and perhaps he will have a lot more to share with the country in terms of what we intend to do. On the PIC, let me be frank. The PIC, I think, manages currently 1.7 trillion rands. So anybody who wants to start a business or is trying to look for leverage, financially speaking, to take over a business or initiate one, more often than not is to take over or get a shareholding in, we'll see the PIC as a potential source. So that puts an immense amount of pressure on institutions like the PIC. The others like the IDC and so on would face them similar pressure as well. Polite pressure is one thing. In other words, we try to persuade on the basis of facts and a business case. Impolite pressure, and I say this euphemistically, is what we should all be worried about. In other words, where inordinate pressure is brought about in order to say support A but not B in a particular kind of context. So there's been an excellent effort to improve governance through the board of the PIC, ensure that appropriate checks and balances are in place, and that proper risk management takes place at the end of the day. But remember also that the PIC is on the one hand an asset manager, but it also uses private sector asset managers as well, because it's a huge amount of money. that we are talking about, and we need the appropriate spread of risk as well. So this is, in a sense, a partnership between the PIC and people in the private sector. On CETAs, I think that's best discussed with higher education, unless the DG wants to comment. But I think the criticisms around CETAs and the effectiveness, unless Zavandi has been quite open about that. But I'm not on top of the reforms that he's been trying to initiate in this particular regard. But the contradiction between constantly pumping in money into any system and having poor quality outputs is one that we have to deal with. That's not only in the education sector, it happens in many places. Housing, for example, is another. So that's why we have rectification program after houses are built, and billions of rand have to be spent on that. On SACU and regional integration, there's a process underway which will take place in the next couple of weeks to once again revisit the formula issue. And in essence, what we're saying in South Africa is that we've got to safeguard the small economies in SACU that are dependent on SACU revenue for anything between 50 and 70% of their product. In a way in which they are able to create an economic base and economic activity in their own countries that will avail them revenue that they would require to supplement whatever they get from SACU. And that's where regional integration, regional value chains, connection between industries in South Africa and elsewhere in the SACU region and vice versa becomes quite crucial. And it's in this context that South Africa, as for as long as I can remember, been promoting the idea of a parallel development fund. So on the one hand, you have a revenue sharing fund, and on the other hand, a development fund, which looks at the more long-term prospects of improving the economies in the SACU countries. But that's not an easy objective to achieve as well. So together with Minister Davies and soon the President as well, we hope we can get some work done in this area to test the waters again as to whether we can get some movement. On SAA, I hear you, Chair, and let's with you schedule a date and we can put some of that before you. But we don't have a board yet. We've crafted a list of names, and in that sense it's work in progress as well. But we do require a proper board, and we require an efficient management team to take the enterprise to a new level. I'm sure many of you are spotting foreign airlines like it's going out of fashion at airports other than Joburg. If you look at Durban, you have, I don't want to name them, but you have all sorts of airlines that didn't have any space to operate from even 2 years ago, that are now operating international flights from those environments. So I don't know who's losing or gaining market share as a consequence of that. From the New Development Bank or the BRICS Bank, the DG is more on top of it than I am, but South Africa, like all of the partners, BRICS partners, have submitted projects that they are looking at, and they are about to finalize which projects they would actually sponsor. And I think once this engine begins to move, it's going to be a huge possibility, or additional possibility for accessing reasonably priced funding for South Africa. So we must have a more medium-term, long-term view of this as an important project in which South Africa plays quite a leading role in establishing the new BRICS Bank or the New Development Bank. On the Central Procurement Office, I think to Ms. Brown's credit and DG's credit, over the last 18 months or so, 24 months perhaps, they've done an excellent job to build up a good and capable unit around Mr. Brown. But as you would have seen our announcement, he's staying on at the Treasury. And the task of the DG as part of his functions is to ensure that there's proper succession planning, because at one stage or another, all of us are going to move. The political ones can't indicate who's going to replace them. but the administrative one could prepare the ground to put options before those who are going to make the choices, and that's something that he mentioned under Program 1 when he made his presentation to you. The expenditure reviews, the DG will address. The budget and NDP alignment, the DG and Mr. Vatajana will address. But yes, I don't accept the proposition, by the way, that there's no alignment between the NDP and the budget. We've been trying to do this for a few years now. Depends what you're looking for. So if you take job creation as an objective, you're going to find budget items. It won't say NDP versus X so much allocated to it, but you'll find job creation projects being funded within government, within the budget framework as well. What we are talking about in the new process is, what they will describe more in detail, is how we will now establish priorities first through timing, monitoring, and evaluation, then review allocations. And ideally, what we need to get to is zero-based budgeting, or as close to it as possible. And what that means is, don't just add X percentage to what you got last year. But, in fact, look at what you've been doing, and ask the question, should you be doing all the things that you are doing? Should you scale down? Should you cut down? Should you actually support one program more than the other? Because that's what is aligned to the priority that we've actually defined. And in that sense, there are also going to be greater participation of ministers in the process as well. Both electronic trading and the standard charter of accounts, or charts of accounts, the DG will deal with. I think we need to differentiate between the accounting system on the one hand as a set of rules, and system as an IT, when you respond, but he'll clear that up for you. Honourable Member Pinky, as she was called, Ketana, has raised an important issue on growth and the impact of other spheres. There's a World Bank report that the DG often accepts, so too, I'm not sure if you've done it in your presence, published late last year on doing business in South Africa, but in 8 metros. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it gives you a graphic example of how either bad regulation or over-bureaucratic practices actually limits business investment in municipalities, and which are the areas, for example, connection to electricity or approval of zoning plans and so on. Which city or metro does take how long? And you get quite a nice comparison among the metros. And there's a similar thing, business support, in terms of the World Bank as well. So you're absolutely right. When you talk about investment, you're talking about investment in a municipal area. So if you are able to provide the logistical facility or the water that's required or refuse removal that's required or slight adjustments that might be required to a road faster, then the municipality is likely to get the investments compared to another. Similarly, on the capacity to implement plans, we need to become an implementation state. The word developmental state is nice, but you can be developmental in your articulation and very poor at implementation. And a greater focus, perhaps even from Parliament's side, should be, what have you done? Know what your plans are. And show the impact of what you've done. Because getting tired of officials sitting and copying plans, and not enough attention being made or given to the impact that they actually have. On lessons from Section 100, that's a long story from Limpopo. In the city of Limpopo, because there are many, I was involved at one stage, and then it happened subsequent to my departure from finance, but the DG might want to comment on it. But I think you should have a separate session about, in the context of intergovernmental relations, what are our BFMA responsibilities and constitutional responsibilities as the Treasury arose in the earlier context as well. When do we intervene? When don't we intervene? And when do we leave it to others to intervene as well? is an important question, and your thoughts and guidance in that intergovernmental context will be quite important. And your calling up the provincial treasuries, I think, will be very useful as a way of understanding what's going on the one hand, perhaps applying pressure on the other hand. On Honorable Shivambo's point on whether we should have guidelines for what departments can spend money on, we've given general guidelines on cost cutting that could apply to the kind of context that you are talking about. I'm not sure whether we can go to the point of you can put money in one enterprise or you can't put money in another. But as parliament, you're welcome to call departments to order and say, why are you doing X and Y and Z? What's the value proposition for actually undertaking such activities? Then, Chair, your points around, which you addressed to an extent, I'm sure that Dean has heard you on quarterly reports. On the NDP and budget, there will be some elaboration now. You note your point about Eskom and its 46 million rand expenditure. On disposal of non-core assets, the general point I want to make here is that many countries have found themselves in, let's call it, either fiscal stress or fiscal distress for one or other reason. It was quite interesting the kind of direction that Saudi Arabia is moving in, where they are now selling many of their oil assets to accumulate $2 trillion and create a sovereign wealth fund. And that sovereign wealth fund is to basically create a new economy outside of the oil industry. So there's a lot of out-of-the-box thinking that's going on, whereas in South Africa we're still married to fairly old ideas. And the extent to which we limit ourselves in terms of how we utilize the resources that we have in order to continue to still benefit the country and in particular poor people and disadvantaged people is going to be testimony to our ability to be innovative in a tough environment that we actually find ourselves in. So I know it's an ideologically tough issue, but it's one that we must confront. Come up with some imaginative answers as well. On the integrated financial system, again, I haven't had enough time to catch up with that, but DG will address it. On the NDB, I've spoken to it. And on the Property Rates Act, I agree with you. But in fact, it's not just the traditional leader who has a three-story house. I've seen in different parts of the country people from the urban area building massive mansions, but on communally owned land. Yeah, that's the point. And those should all be rated. Those should all be rated. They should all pay the normal... Yeah. And I agree with it fully. So we will ask our officials to talk to the necessary people to see how we begin to move in that direction. So, Chair, I'm going to leave at 12:30, if you don't mind. And I'll leave it to the DG to continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, DG Chair. Honourable members, I'm just going to try and address two categories of questions that members posed. My function, the Treasurer, is public finances. I look at the public finance division, program part of Program 3, as we explained earlier on. Now, if you look at our fiscal, what I call our fiscal consolidation agenda, started effectively around 2012-2013 financial year. In there, we started in MTPS of 2013, introduced what broadly cost containment measures. That's when the issue of our cars and a whole lot of other categories of expenditure we tried to clamp on. So that, you can see, was one of the first phases of our fiscal consolidation agenda. The second one was the introduction or the pronouncement that the Chief Procurement Officer would be established around issues around broadly reform around procurement. And we think we have finally, or currently, as this agenda is continuing, the third phase is what is then expenditure reviews. We have in the last 2 or 3 years have been building capacity around conducting expenditure reviews. To date, Between myself and GPNE, we have put together about 30 sets of expenditure reviews. We are not concentrating mainly on large programs, but we kind of took small programs, some programs in some cases, lease agreements, for instance, around government accommodation, and others. But what we are going to be doing moving forward, because this is a critical pillar in our fiscal reform, expenditure reviews which are broadly around the world are done for two reasons. One is to see the impact of your programs, and secondly, more recently, in most emerging economies, especially with the contraction in government revenues and taxes revenues, is to do them with the idea of informing your allocations and when it be stop certain programs and move some of the budget and allocations to programs that can be more effective, that can generate economic growth. So we are doing that expenditure review to address those two. So moving forward, we'll be focusing on a number of them. We will be, and our assistant foreign minister quite said, one of the key first meetings with the Department of Permanent and Monetary Evaluation is taking place this coming Friday. So look at two things. One is how we approach next year's budget process, and second, also what informs some of what we should be focusing on moving forward. One of the big reviews that we'll be doing currently is around the incentives, the business incentives and kind of allocations that around the motor industry and so on and so on, around economic business incentives that we've introduced. We want to do some review on that to see if there's need to add more resources to boost economic growth, or if need be to pull back on some of the expenditures that we're carrying around certain incentives, if need be. The second part of my response is around the municipal status of accounts. I can comfortably say we've got reasonable experience after having gone through from around as early as 96, 97, those years. We have 4 million lines, if you want to call it there, within government. Remember, 94 just happened, we had self-governing state, homelands, we had House of Delegates, House of Reps. Now, in consolidating all that, and remember, from a finance system point of view, we have to merge all of the systems. So we have about 4 million lines to agree on what would be standard charts of accounts for provincial spending and also for national government spending. So I'm saying we've got reasonable experience after having gone through the phase, at least with the current in Treasury. We have done it. Now, and we know the complexities around municipalities and the number of municipalities. We think, and we are saying that in the budget review, that we will be focusing on standardizing charts for municipalities. And I think with the experience that we've gained over the years, we've got the phases right as to what needs to happen. If you remember, in terms of implementation of the PFMA, we had to synchronize it with the promulgation of the Municipal Finance Management Act in 2003, around that time. We had to phase in certain provisions of the Act. And in terms of our budget reform, I spoke about fiscal consolidation agenda. In terms of our budget reform agenda, around modernizing public finances, both at national and provincial, we have got a roadmap that we can learn lessons from. Now, approaching municipalities and how we face in the Municipal Finance Management Act, I think we are comfortable that at this point in time in our reform and our history as a country and building this valuable institution that's called the Treasury, we think we're at that point now where we can introduce your standard chart of municipal finances, and because there's reasonable data that we can work with and there's reasonable experience that we have gained. Finally, just in terms of the alignment of NDP, the National Development Plan and the budget, because we constantly hear a narrative that says budget is not aligned and from various quarters. What we did for the budget review, the budget that we introduced in 2013, page 59 to page 73 of the budget review, chapter 5, we have introduced, we have approached the chapter by linking, showing what the NDP and NDP priorities are, And outlining in detail per section how that relates and allocations, actual monies that are allocated to what addressing some of the milestones and some of the key activities, objectives outlined in NDP. And that is between pages 53 and 79 of budget review. Thanks.
Anybody else can see that? I know the minister's saying, if you could just bail, you know? Because he thinks you need to go on record, minister, so that the researchers pull the report together. Actually, again, I'm not asking any questions. I'm just dealing with the committee's responsibility. As you can appreciate,
we develop our program more finally after we have the budget for consideration. A lot of things now define our program. Ideally, we would like to minister. It's not easy. Minister Nene was very keen on this as well. But you know, you have a special department. The previous ministers, what we did is in like middle of February, we went off for a day. You recall when you were a chair, you did that also. And we sat somewhere, well now we want to sit in a certain parliament and discuss the DS program. But in your case with the budget, it's very hard to get a meeting going. Because Minister of Finance, whoever it is so caught up preparing the budget. But we need to find something, maybe the late January period, Africa, even our day, where the minister must come, because he's a political head, and doesn't stay the whole day. And the DG, we had it last year. So that helped us to have the elements. Now, it's really now that you shape the final program. The second issue we draw attention to, which I've raised with informally with both the DG and both are sympathetic, I see, is you see the relationship between processing legislation and overseas. If you look at the entities under your portfolio, SARS, FSB, PIC, many of them are challenged, right? And so we kind of as a committee say, oh, we'll process these three fat bills that we've got. And they're very fat bills. Not just in number of pages, but in weight. And there's no way I can tell you now that you've got us a 224-page FSR bill, right? We've even got public hearings upstanding on that. We've got the insurance bill of 72 pages. Then we've got the FIFA bill. Now, you know, in our committee, Jefferson, we look at every clause, that the committee hears in public hearing, and we put it on a grid, right? So we, on the FIFA bill, for example, we've now spent close to twice the amount of time that we planned to. So it is laughable when some committee members of a certain party write to say they're not coming to meetings because we are fast-tracking the bill. Laughable at a time when very few parliaments in the world, very few committees take every course and look at it and say, right, Treasury, under this. What do you think, PBO? What do you think, research? So we are told we are fast-tracking bills and, I don't know, some conspiracy theories. Laughable, actually. I don't even reply to some of the messages. Especially as famous as Indies and Italians. Here was a fact. So we've spent twice the amount of time on the FICA bill, whatever it's called, frequently. And can I suggest something? Minister, I've raised it informally, but I want it on record now. You've got a very good team. And I'm one of the few people you can take seriously. I think I've been in Guinness Book of Records for a number of committees I've chaired, right, in this parliament. I think it's five. None of the committees that I have chaired and taken responsibility for has got the quality you have. I served on the other side, so to speak, for 5 years. Take those two committees I have, or those two portfolios. None of them has your quality. None of them seems to have your dedication either, actually. You are by, you know, maybe bring another portfolio or another role political outside this. People might be unhappy, but we have to deal with the facts as I tell them in the meetings that I go to at political stuff. The truth is, I may have ideological and other differences, you know, some of you may have ideological differences, but you're playing a particular role with yourselves. The fact is, despite that, and you do consult, right? Minister, we want to plead. If you look at this FIC bill, here again, people say we are fast-tracking it, laughable. We ask you to go engage with the stakeholders. And to be fair to the stakeholders, 80% of the amendments they proposed to you at the outset, before you brought to our bill here, for some reason you didn't accept it then, as such, now you are accepting it. It's not as if we're pushing you to do it. So, on other bills, for example, financial sector regulation, I think we've done a lot of consultation. So, on those bills, you do the contrast. So, what I'm saying, instead of bringing this quickly to us for this financial year, consult a bit more. You would have saved us time on the FIC bill, frankly, if you came with a bill that had more consultation, especially in the context of your Department of Fields and Affairs. Many of them, the amendments that have come to us, we've secured the outset. But nevertheless, I don't want to say, I think you've got a very good team. I think the majority will agree, I'm sure others won't agree, but you know what? I'm just saying that simply as those that are processed, with more consultation, don't lumber the program because we can't do our oversight. The other things that we can let you go, we can put in our report. But there is one thing that I think the committee is correct to say, Minister. It is that if there is much more synergy between the NDP and the budget, and our colleague there refers to certain features. I did manage, by the way, I remember listening through a document much later than I should have as a scholar. But I think what people are saying is that it's not clear. You see, for example, I think you agree with me. You're saying jobs are there, jobs are in there. Within terms of the NDP. Jobs have always been there from 1994. It's exactly how the budget is oriented towards the NDP.
because then you've given us an oversight tool. Not all of us agree with everything in the NDP, but for now, it's the government's program. So if you can help us, because you have the technical skills, you don't have a content advisor, you just got a new researcher, etc., etc. So is there some way in a year or so from now, there's a greater clarity? Yes, there will be, and you see from your side as the executive, but you have to communicate that. Maybe we have a whole session on that sometime this year, on the NDP budget correlation. And then maybe you help, although you're the executive, tell us what tool you're using. I hear what you're saying, Minister, about EPNE brought in, you know, transform the budget to DGCS. Then once you've sorted those issues out, maybe the second half of the day, we'll be back, you come, and you tell us what executive tool you're using. Then we say, okay, as Parliament, we can't just take your tool, but you help us to hold you to account. So that's what we're saying, basically. I don't think there's any disagreement with what you're saying and what we're saying. The other things, Minister, we can raise in your absence.
I can respond quickly. On the first two, budget planning and consultation, before we bring those to you, full agreement. So you just have to look at modalities of that. On the NDP and budget, I think if you take, even if you take an issue like jobs, for example, the government doesn't create jobs on the scale that the economy creates jobs. Right? So it is both a context and, if you like, a proposition that needs to be understood in order to understand A, the number that's in the budget, and B, its alignment with the NDP, and C, its alignment with the proposition, so to speak. But perhaps we, in that planning process, and even now, get it going at some stage, we might be able to have those sorts of discussions and at least understand each other in terms of what we're actually looking for. Because it's not a grid we're looking at necessarily. But there have been grids in the budget review which said, if looking for this, look at this chapter or this page, and so on. You have that level of alignment. But it's also a mutual understanding. Depending on the party you come from or the ideological perspective you come from, it might vary. The stance might vary that you take on each of these issues as well. But let's follow your lead in this regard and we'll support you.
Further than maybe I'm suggesting, we can reach it to the chairperson's forums and so on. So other committees, like public enterprises, could throw on it. I don't know. Maybe I'm not making my sense for now. Let's leave it at that. Thank you very much, Minister. You have to go. So it was more who was going to speak.
Yes, Chair. Don't be guilty about giving you so much work on bills, but let me keep quiet. I think, Chair, the Minister answered a lot of the questions, so it's a bit difficult to provide further answers. But certainly I think on the Panama issue, I mean, we've always had things like divorce, leaks, etc. They complement the legitimate processes where, with the automatic exchange of information, where you're going to get this annual information that will be given to an agency like SARS, the scope to hide your funds offshore are getting narrower and narrower. Sure, there are ways that people can still get around. Panama in particular refused to sign for the automatic exchange of information. And obviously now you see some innovative journalists have managed to get this info, and it seems to me they're releasing it in tranches. They went for head of state, they went for the head of FIFA, and it seems like they are going to be providing more and more information. And like when you have, say, a divorce, and people start going for each other in the media, that's when you find out certain assets that perhaps weren't declared. And we like to think that our agencies read newspapers and follow up on these issues. So obviously that's not done by the Treasury, it's done by SARS from a tax perspective. It's done by the SAR when it comes to offshore accounts to make sure that these are done legitimately. If there's any hint of money laundering, the FIC certainly comes into the picture, and I would imagine the prosecuting authorities would also have an interest when things come up. So we need to keep our agencies, we need to make sure how vocal they are in following up when these stories come out. So certainly this is a goldmine, and from what I understand, when the info is sitting with the German newspaper house, so you know, it will probably take some time before our authorities can get some of that information. As was the case with HSBC, there was a leak a few years ago, and I think the info finally only got to SARS last year, year before, a few years after, because they had to request the information. If I just go by a press report, SARS must answer for itself. But I think they had to go, for example, to the French authorities. And we should bear in mind that even when the other authorities provide information, even under the Authentic Exchange, it is confidential to the tax authority. So you will know that in the UK, when the Her Majesty's Revenue Office got such information, before they could pass it on to other government agencies, they had to secure the approval of the French authorities. Now, it's in our interest to make sure that our agencies keep to that agreement, because if they don't, then in future the source of information may dry up. So I just thought it's important just to keep in mind, I think, some of these provisions. Of course, ultimately, I mean, those who break the law or do things quietly are not people who exactly come knocking on the door and telling us what they're going to do. I mean, we have to actually use our agencies to use their best investigative powers to find out, and the analytical powers to get that kind of information. And the question that Honourable McCloskey has asked, I know she has been passionate about the consolidation of these retirement funds in local government. Yes, very passionate, and I like that. And yes, you know, we've had our hands full, but I've been even pushing our staff to get it going, because even before you can get a major reform, I think that if the state just looks at all the pension funds that sit, there's certainly scope for to consolidate. It will bring down costs, by the way. The more funds you have, the higher the cost. So it's completely in line with our retirement reforms. And I think an area that if you can hold us to account, we probably need to push on more. And you've asked this a number of times before, and I'm disappointed to say we haven't delivered yet. But are these local government pension funds, are state-owned entity pension funds? I think that all of those are quite important issues to look at. In effect, Chair, talking about the fiscal consolidation question, although that is left mainly to my colleague here, Donald, and it's often on the expenditure side, I think the Minister did say in the budget that there is scope for consolidation on many state-owned entities. Now, I'm talking on smaller ones. Certainly, when you look at the two-thirds bill, I do think that there's scope to actually not only consolidate, but in that instance to get the regulator to pay for that. And in fact, it's come to our attention that many more bodies on the financial sector fund, they sit with other departments, like even the housing department has a mortgage thing, which really is just doing market conduct. So I think that's an area that we could certainly look at. There would be quick gains, I think, in many of these. In terms of, so there was one question on the special VDP, voluntary disclosure program. That bill will be coming to Parliament. It has been published. We do need to get the legislation through. I think we're scheduled to come sometimes in middle of April. I think those were all the questions, GC, that I had.
I'm in a very good position because there are very few questions left. But let me start with Honourable Kosa's question on what could be the concrete examples of fiscal consolidation. Let me start first by just the most simplest definition of fiscal consolidation, what we're talking about is the narrowing of the gap between what we expend and the revenues that we get. Which put different means, because part of what we're spending now is financed through debt, it is the reduction of that portion which is financed through debt as a percentage, you could say, of total expenditure, but generally it is expressed as a percentage of GDP, making that smaller and smaller over time. presumably reaching zero at some point, and maybe turning positive, which is when we may go to surplus. Now, I will just illustrate then how, and these are projections, not what has happened in the past, it's very important. That's what, it's a statement of intent now. Then later on, of course, there are specific actions that have been taken to demonstrate a desire, a will to achieve that outcome. It's not only kneeling and praying that it happens. First, if you just look at the very highest level, if you compare in each one of the next 3 years, the rate of growth in expenditure against the rate of growth in GDP, you will see that the rate of growth in GDP outpaces the rate of growth in expenditure. In year one, what's the significance of that connection? It is the fact that we tax GDP, so the income that generates to finance the expenditure comes from GDP. So if the rate of growth in GDP, real terms, is faster than the rate of growth in expenditure, then before you even look at an indicator, it tells you that there is consolidation because the affordability of what we are spending is increasing whilst the rate of expenditure is increasing faster than the rate of growth in expenditure. GDP growth in 2016 is projected at 0.9%, whereas the real growth in expenditure is 0.2. Now, consistently over the MTF, although the gap narrows a bit, which means they almost go at the difference between the two places. So that's the first indicator. The second indicator of this is this technical relationship between a primary balance, which is the non-interest expenditure against revenue in a given year. Last year, preliminarily, the primary balance is minus 0.6 or 22.5 billion rand. In 2016-17, it is a positive 15.4 billion or I think it's 0.4% of GDP. It then increases. You'll find these numbers I'm referring to. I might sound clever here, I'm not. You'll find them in chapter 3 of the budget review. I talk about them every day, so I remember almost. They are my bread and butter, but I'm not any clever than any of you. It is 15.4 or 4% of GDP. It rises to 62 billion projected by 18-19. Or 1.2%, these are the numbers that I was using. So in a way, you will see then on page 38 of the book, we then show in graphical terms that the rate of growth in debt slows first, then probably reaches zero, and then it turns negative, the rate of growth, which means, in the graph that you see there, I don't think it actually does turn negative, which would be the position when we reach a surplus. So that again is a sign when the primary balance turns positive, then it means the rate of change in what you are adding to your stock of debt is slowing down. Now, these things are not, these relationships that I've just described, which is probably the last bit of the comment on this, they have not just happened on their own, they have happened because of policy decisions that have been taken. The first one relates to the cut in expenditure of 10 billion in 2017-18 and 15 billion in 2018-19. Yeah. Combined with, so in other words, we have slowed down the rate of change in expenditure by doing that. On the other hand, we have increased the rate of change in revenue by increasing taxes or changing tax policy or rates. The 18 billion this year, 15 and 15 in the 2 years. So those policy measures have meant that we slow down the rate of growth in expenditure, while accelerating somewhat the rate of change in revenues. Hence, in the public domain, you would have heard in the immediate aftermath of the tabling of the budget, some people saying more could have been done on the revenue side, more could have been done on the expenditure side. They were meaning that the closing of that gap could have been done faster and so on. It's a judgment call, to be honest with you. When you are a commentator, it's easy to pick one thing and run with it. But when you are a policy maker or a policy advisor, you've got to live with the consequences of what you advise or the policy you institute. So in other words, some of the people would advise us cut expenditure more, raise taxes more, they wouldn't be there to explain the consequences of it. Assuming, for instance, this were to translate to slowing growth, increasing unemployment, and potential, by the way, an equilibrium with a lower output, in other words, GDP, lower employment, lower revenue, and on the opposite end, a higher deficit than what you wanted to do. So, you know, often in these things, one has got to temper one's exuberance. You know, you may want to get to a certain point. If you try too hard to get to it too fast, the consequences could be dire. So you've got to hurry up slowly, you know, which is a term that I don't even think exists in this. I hope that... now, the Ministry of Transfers, I should touch on the SOEs and what we do to hold them accountable and reduce the risk that the contingent liabilities would become other liabilities. One of the things we do is to put most SOEs on a very tight leash once they have those guarantees. But it's not a very nice thing. But I think it's okay for our system to work. For instance, there are reporting requirements that go with the guarantees. Depending on the size of the guarantee and the relationship between the treasury and the entity whose debt is guaranteed. In other words, is it an entity that falls under another department or ministry, or is it an entity, as is the case, ESCOM is under DPE, or is it an ESCOM like an entity, SOE like FAA, which falls under. But there are reporting requirements, there are regular reviews of the status of where the entity is in terms of complying with a whole lot of things on the guarantees. Those reviews can take the form of written reports between the entity and government, or sometimes they even take place in the form of formal meetings, just so that we can always have our finger on the pulse to understand where the entity is, what the risk associated with the guarantees. We have a unit at Treasury which is called Risk. It's not a unit, it's a secretary within ALM. It's called Risk and Strategy. It sort of do a technical assessment of the risk associated with each one of these guarantees, the probability that it could be, the guarantee could be caught. And then we report, although there is no requirement in law to do this, but we instituted it a few years ago, we report periodically to cabinet so that the rest of the system knows about the status of these things. And then corrective or remedial actions can be taken, or in some instances they may not be taken, but at least we would have told the people, put the information to them to say, this is the status, this is the risk associated with this, we are uncomfortable with this one, and of course we think these are the remedial actions or steps that need to be taken, and then sometimes actions get taken, other times they don't get taken. Let me make this remark in passing, which is that a lot of, let me restate that, some entities, yes, I'm trying to use all the time so that there is no further question.
I don't mean it. So no, that was it was I don't know if folks are allowed in Parliament, but it's you sometimes feel that entities would wish for an approach that says you give us the guarantee and stay away from our business. You know, there's a bit of resistance and so on. We frown upon that. We really don't tolerate. In fact, some of them almost go so far as to suggest interference when you monitor them with these guarantees. And I want to tell you, and people want to know, I want people to know that we will never flinch in taking or doing our job. You don't have to ask people if they are enjoying it, but it has got to happen because it's necessary in the system that there should be that tension and that oversight. Let me make one passing remark on the issue you raised about the PIC, because the minister didn't touch on this part. One of the things that people sometimes overlook when they think about PIC investment and stuff like that, they forget the GPF. The money belongs to the GPF, right? The PIC is a fund manager of a unique kind in a way, but it is not very different from BlackRock, you name any other fund manager for that. So it is something to always bear in mind when people want to check, is what is happening at the PIC still okay? Because the PIC will come to you and say, everything we've done is what the GPF asked us to do in terms of our mandate, and the meeting can end before it has started. It's always very important to interact with the GPF and understand what mandate have they given the PIC, and is the PIC doing what the GPF asked them to do, because they should be managing the money in terms of what the GPF has guided them, and so on. Close to finishing. So let me make this point on this alignment between the NDP and budget. I mean, we all have got interpretations that you've heard, Donald one, ministers one. I actually think my case, the problem lies with the fact that our priority setting process is not sufficiently developed. In other words, when the time has come to set priorities, we want, let me restate as this, often the temptation is to make sure that the rest of government sees itself in the list of priorities that we set. So a healthy nation is a priority, a sporting nation becomes a priority, infrastructure. So, and once you do that, then when you ask the question, is the budget aligned to priorities? When it's signed to everything to everyone, it can never be right. And part of what we are tend to avoid is to disappoint people. We are avoiding upsetting people. In other words, say, your department is important, but it is not a priority this time. Our priorities are three. It's investing in infrastructure, it's investing in skills, it's investing, let's say, in whatever. But when the list exceeds five, it is not priorities, and you will look all over the place. You can never demonstrate that you're so in a sense, then you attack the part of the process that for some reason can be attacked. In other words, this budget is not quite aligned to priorities. Then you ask, what are they and where are they? If you say the NDP, look how many chapters there are in it and how sections. If you are trying to have a budget that has got all of those things, you are not prioritizing. You simply aren't. What you do is to go into the NDP and say, for these 5 years from now to that point, the following five things or less will be priorities. And it means most of the funds, if that's the way in which they should find expression, should go to those. For as long as our system does not get to a point where at the highest political level, I can speak with authority on this, I've been part of this system for nearly 20 years now. For as long as the system doesn't put a document that then goes to the Minister of Finance and the Minister has put on the budget that says, here are the three or five priorities and nothing else, then there will always be this use of the budget's final product as a scapegoat, where people say, it is not aligned priorities. And of course, if we don't talk about these things, however inconvenient they are, then we never get anywhere. On this second tool, the second last point, the standard set of accounts, Honorable Liz, is about the classifications, not the IT system. And not that the IT system is actually unimportant, because the point you are getting to is, can there be interfaces between what all municipalities use individually and some system at the provincial and national level, so that you can do yes, consolidation. So you it's not unimportant, you are right, but for now it's the other, not the other. The electronic trading platform, it can only be as vulnerable to technical failures in IT to the extent that IT fails sometimes. But generally it should be real-time information regardless of where one is checking, once they've got the authority to. Thank you very much, sir.
Can I just suggest a plug? You're running out of time, it's 1 o'clock, but I'll let you speak.
The National Treasury always refers to the Financial Sector Regulation Bill as a twin peak bill. It's not a twin peak bill. Even the recommendations in the bill itself are not speak about two regulatory authorities. There is a provincial regulatory authority which is proposed. There is a financial services sector authority, conduct authority, and there is still retention of the credit authority, and there is still the retention of the Financial Intelligence Center for Financial Crimes. There are many other components that are recommended. And I thought we had held a discussion when we visited the Bank of England and the professor from the London School of Economics, LSE, illustrated evidence that even the UK system is not twin peak. That conceptual foundation and mistaken misnomer is very confusing and should not be misapplied every time. It's not a twin peak approach which is being recommended in terms of the financial regulatory bill, the financial sector regulation bill. It must be given proper characterization, because the continued misnomer is problematic.
Okay, basically I was going to raise a report sent back to the researchers, because it just didn't meet any minimum quality. It's come back to me, and I will attend to it this weekend, and hopefully next week we can insert that the point will be there. We can vote on the report sometime next week, but I will send it to all the members who participated in the study to a first look at, so they can add it, because nobody actually did what we asked them to do, to submit comments on the report, which, by the way, Floyd, you must also answer for, because you could have written that in 2 minutes and sent it to the researcher, then you didn't. I will write to your secretary to complain about your performance here. But that's different. So very quickly, I think that we must agree on the going to the report also. So can I meet the team, including the PBO, for a few minutes after this meeting? But we should look in our report, I'm sure Commerce Degree, College Degree, but what we asked for last year, right? And then, you know, pick up where we are at the moment. We also look at our other reports in between. Just to repeat, the SARS matter, we know there are all these issues. As Parliament, it's reasonable for us to say, before the quarterly report, SARS and your department, can you finalise any possible, right? On SAA, we don't budge on that text, right? So please do what you have to do. On the Panama issue, I think we have to bring 7 committees together. Let's just do it, right? Let's just do it. Let's drop one of the sittings on SSR book and put the Panama issue on there. But let's give UDG and SARS an opportunity to pull some work together. It's too soon to have a sitting. So what we'll see to do is, I think we're writing on the 26th of May. Maybe in the week before that, it gives you enough time to do your own work, right? If there are members, Floyd and others, who want to ask questions, of course you raised it and so on, can you, over time, the date would be, let's say the 10th or so of May, then it's a Sunday, you can send us your questions. You then make a productive exchange with the ministry and department and so on. Right? Then on the issue of... Yeah.
We must also get an indication of how far the process is of their APP and the subclaim. Oh, that's the one. Okay.
Then the committee will note in our report that we want this thing done before court. Then on AVO, we need to find some slot. Or when you come here for the quarterly report, can you insert that? Remember, you do the first draft of the report, right? So on ABLE, maybe you deal with that when you come with your quarterly report. On SOE's financial management issue, we will have to engage with public enterprise democracy. Both. Not enough groups here. Yeah, we're going to say in our report that Parliament, we have to do that, that actually we want this thing finalized expeditiously. We'll say, yeah, while recognizing the challenges around it, come on, we, the committee, feel that we finalize the examination, we'll see the text. Yeah, they will come and explain to us. Yeah. I ask a question now. The minister said, give me some time, this is not sorted out. Nobody came back with a follow-up. So I just left it, but that was a question I did ask, right? So we have then set a deadline. When are they coming? You know, well, you've got all of you have got the program. It'll be tinkered slightly because we lost yesterday, right? Then, on the matter of economic growth, right? Again, this is a big issue. Bringing committees together, you might as well bring your departments together. Can you imagine here? We just can't go in and just do it. It really falls to some extent with the economic development department. So we'll engage with them and try to secure a meeting with the relevant departments. That's about 6 or 7. On the interventions in provincial and local governments and Limpopo, NDOP, that's still an NDOP matter. And they are going to do it anyway, so we won't say anything in our report about it. Just note that the NCOP, we understand, is going to look at that issue of intervention of the value. On the issue of adverts in papers, on this must very strongly. You know, you see it all the time. Somebody is advertising for submissions on the IDP in a national newspaper, a small remote municipality somewhere in, you know, we don't even know where it is, you know. If they're announcing over indigenous radio stations locally, it'll cost them 1/20th of what they think to listen, or the Saturday Star or whatever. I saw it on the Saturday Star about 3 weeks ago, and I cut it out. And in fact, on this matter, we must be unrelentingly putting pressure on you, recognizing though that you have limited powers and functions of Makosi, no less as a former local government activist, but you can do so much in no local and provincial government. So on that issue, I think it will be very tough, everybody, in our report Parliament. Align between, we covered that, still a bit of a couple of business incentives. Makosi has raised this issue repeatedly also, and I see you picking it up. This thing we picked up somewhere, in the automotive industry, invest so much of money, great, right? So we're competitive internationally, but the number of jobs we need, hot to feel, right? So you guys, I think, you officials, I think, on occasion when she raised it, also said you agree. So we need to look into that issue. I don't know what we do, bring DTI in, department. Can we put that on the agenda? To be realistic, we haven't got the time now, August. We bring department of, I mean, DI yourself, the see, getting committees together. That committee is also a committee that's got millions of things to do. It's got a very active chairperson, and they really get good. And so, you know, putting it together will be difficult, but let's talk about August. We bring that there, and we call. So you want to say something on that issue? Yeah, sure.
I mean,
about the EDP bill in April. I just, you know, how much time do we need to process that? I don't think it should take long. And then Question one other was, we talked some time about a joint meeting with regard to the nuclear field, whether that can be included somewhere.
Chair, it's part of the rates bill. Remember, we have split the bill into a money bill portion, and it's just it's very short, 3 pages or so, if I remember. Because it gets to the admin issues. We published it on budget day, so I think we're scheduled to come mid-April, and then I never want to say any bills should be quick. I'm saying
you have to have a lot of before the 27th of May. 7th of May. You have to pass it before the 27th of May.
It would be nice.
Can we postpone the FSR for that? Well, we have to redo the program this afternoon anyway.
Okay, what I would suggest is you should run those in parallel. You can do it a bit later, but as long as it's passed by before October, when it gets effect.
No, let's just deal with it quickly. Yeah. So can I suggest we focus more on this bill? I will talk to Shuni and sort it out this afternoon, and we remove FSR bills later. So in other words, the other things we'll have on the thing, and deal with.
Okay.
What else is there? We also alert you to what we said in our fiscal framework report. A lot of stakeholders know the issues better than we do, including a professor who claimed that he was previously on your committee. No matter what he says here. That 6 months is too brief a period, right? So think about that. But let's see what you will. Sorry, DJ. What is it? It's on your program. Look at your program. We put the date in there. I think it's first possible. The program was sent to you last week. I think it's not today. It's 10 o'clock in the morning that day, you'll notice that there's no committee meeting.
A couple of quick things, sir. The first one was, you will notice that there are questions that I have skipped because you said when we do our quarterly thing. So it's going to be very important between ourselves and your office to make sure that we then, when we get to that, we answer all of it. But I want to make sure that on the incentives thing is understood. We are doing a review of all incentives. We may take it in bits. We're doing a review of all incentives. We skipped that and glossed over it when we were talking about the overview. Because it is very important, precisely for the questions you are raising. What is their impact on growth? What is their impact on employment, on export? Sometimes imports, well, some import before they export. So it's understanding all of that, with all of them, including our own, the employment tax incentive. We had committed to review after 2 years, and that review is going to happen now, and then determine whether it continues in the current form, has got to be revised, or it could even be terminated if it proves not to be doing what it was intended to achieve. But as a matter of principle, one of the things that we want to remember in the system now is that whenever an incentive is introduced, there must be an understanding that at a certain time it will have to be reviewed against what it is promising. We can just hope that
Very quickly, on the nuclear bill, I'll speak to the committee concerned, particularly the Energy Committee. They don't have any problem. We will find a date to bring it all together. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Department. Over to the it's a support team. They just meeting you for 5 minutes, please.
Thank you, sir.
One memo here, you must put younger is in the documents. This is the weak one. This is the weak one. There will be more documents for this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.